Okay, good morning, everyone. We have a full day today, so we need to get started. Ms. Hansen, would you please take, first I'm going to call Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. Ms. Hansen, can you please take the role? The chair is present.
Chair present. Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Good morning. Lead Albright.
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Bolden. Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Great. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Keel.
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Novotny.
Novotny present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Thanks. Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Sandel.
Sandel present.
Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
And Representative Bolden, I see that you've joined. Thank you so much. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Members, we do have a quorum. Let's see. Vice Chair Bonner, would you like to move the minutes from March 9th?
I would, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to move the minutes from March 9th, 2022. Excuse me.
Okay, Vice Chair Bonner moves the minutes from March 9th. Are there any corrections or discussion of the minutes? Not seeing any. Please unmute yourself or voice vote, members. All those in favor of adopting the minutes from March 9th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Today happens to be Homeless Advocacy Day on the Hill, and so we're going to be hearing six bills that have been heard in Chair Gomez's Preventing Homelessness Division. She's just going to give us an overview of these bills very quickly, not the details, because we have the bill authors here. She's going to give us a brief overview of how they traveled through her division. And then I'm going to have to limit testimony and questions on each bill to get through all six bills. But just know that they've clearly been vetted in the division. Chair Gomez, thank you so much for doing all the work on your division. We really appreciate it. Can you just quickly give us a highlight of the bills we'll be hearing today?
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair Schultz, and thank you to members of the committee. You know, we really appreciate the way that you have advocated for funds for homelessness, for response and for prevention, and the opportunity to share some of our work over the last month or so with you all today. So we're hearing six bills, and there's the bills that we're hearing are basically like the big, there's maybe like six or seven other bills that we've also heard in our committee, but these are the really big pieces that are the priorities that we're moving as a committee. And, you know, I think that the bills we're hearing today really meet two big needs in the state. The first is around emergency shelter. And so my House File 3090 and Representative Ryer's ESP grants, I don't have the bill number in front of me somehow, really deal with kind of leveling up our emergency shelter response. It has been underfunded for decades, for generations. And so we have a situation where there are vast parts of our state where there's no access to emergency shelter at all. And we'll talk a little bit more about what the impacts of that are. The other kind of big piece, as you, I'm sure that folks in this committee remember last year, we were able to move some support through the tax bill as a county aid to support families with children. And, you know, so the intent really with that was like to think about how to stabilize folks who have kids who are getting educated in our systems, and just understanding kind of all of the collateral consequences of like dealing with homelessness and how hard it is to stabilize. And so, you know, we have a little delay that money is not coming online until next year. So over the last year, I've had a lot of conversations with counties from around the state about, you know, just sort of like what our intent was with the bill, hearing their ideas. We did leave it pretty flexible for them. Although, like, you know, I kind of had this like intent that I was really hoping that we would use it to stabilize families with little kids. As I've talked to counties, more and more of them are in a position where they're like, we're going to have to use this money that we know that you wanted to kind of go to these certain families for unaccompanied youth 16 to 24, because there is such great need in that area where these teens and young adults who are not with their families. And so Vice Chair Keeler has been really doing incredible work on the Homeless Youth Act and Safe Harbor, which you'll hear about today, that really brings, again, you know, we're in this year, there has been a great need among this population for decades, and we just haven't met it. And so we are proposing some really robust funding for, especially for emergency shelter and for young people ages 16 to 24. Because if we don't stabilize people 16 to 24, then there's sort of long-term cost to all of our systems. Finally, we're hearing two pieces that one from Representative Hollins that deals with transitional housing, and another from Rep Stevenson that's about a specific drop-in center in his district. But, these bills, a couple of them have had unanimous votes out of our committee. The big money bills, it won't be a shock, were divided votes, but we had really good conversations. I mean, I think that there is, we have a shared desire in my committee, I can say confidently, to take action on these issues to help people who are in these difficult positions. But, you know, we weren't able to get to complete unanimity about how to do that, how to address all of the needs that we see across our state. But, these bills, I think all of them have GOP authors in the Senate that we're gonna hear today, with the exception of the Homeless Youth Act. Chair Abler is hearing there's almost perfect overlap between the bills that the two chairs are hearing today on Homeless Day on the Hill. I don't think that he's hearing Safe Harbor, and there's one that we're not hearing that he's hearing. I think that this is a place in times when we're really divided about a lot of things, that we all know that this impacts every community in our state. And that when people are homeless, when families are homeless, when young people are homeless, like, they can't participate in the good life that we all want for all of our people. I really appreciate the opportunity to bring these bills in front of you today, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. And no one should be homeless, so I'm eager to prioritize and fund these initiatives, as are you. So I'm going to make the motion to adopt the division report for House File 3090. That's Chair Gomez's bill that she will be talking about. So this is going to be a voice vote, members. So all those in favor of the motion to adopt the division report from Preventing Homelessness Division for House File 3090, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. So my motion is to lay over House File 3090. I see you have an A1 amendment, Chair Gomez. Can you describe the amendment for us?
Yes, Madam Chair. So the main thing that the A1 amendment does is that it increases the appropriation from $75 to $100 million. And this, we did this because we've been working on this bill for, I don't know, 8-9 months, a year. You know, this, we knew that this was this issue of shelter capital really has been rising to the top in all of the conversations that we've been having across the state. And so our partners at the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, who are on the call, did a needs assessment sometime last year. And so that's what the $75 million was based on, was, you know, going directly to service providers on the front line and asking them, what do you need? What are you ready to build? And so that was like how we determined that amount. Since then, we've done another needs assessment and the amount went up. And so, you know, we really think it's important to in order to properly kind of like scope what the actual need is, to make sure that the bill had the right amount in it. So that's the substantive change. And then there's a couple of changes to, based on feedback that we got from Lead New Brindley in our committee, we changed a couple of the just some the sorry about the way that it was appropriated to the commissioner and the facilitation of the grants by DHS.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. So I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 3090. Please unmute yourself or voice vote. All those in favor of the motion to adopt the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Here, Chair Gomez, you did describe a little bit about the bill, but if you'd like to add anything before we move the testifiers, please do so.
Yeah, thank you so much, Madam Chair. I just popped up this map on our screen. I hope you guys can see it. So I think this is really important just because what we have is a situation where all across our state, in every county in our state, in every community in our state, every district, people are homeless. However, it's not true that in every county in our state, people have access to support if they get into a position where they need access to community to emergency shelter. So as you'll see, like, you can kind of see the metro. So there's 28 shelters in Hennepin, 16 in Ramsey, and then if you go up to St. Louis County, there are 17 shelters there. Outside of those three counties, it's really hard to access community emergency shelter. And this has a lot of different impacts. I mean, it has impacts, of course, on the individuals, you know, having to pull your kids out of school, potentially go to another part of the state in order to access the services that you need in order to restabilize yourself or your family is the reality that a lot of folks are facing. Yesterday in our committee, was that yesterday, I think? Yesterday in our committee, sorry, you guys know how these days are. We had Ramsey County in for with a request to help them maintain some of the services that they've put in place with ARPA and CARES dollars so that they're not like losing 200 units, 200 beds for homeless folks in 4 weeks. And they shared with us that 55% of the people who they are currently housing are not from Ramsey County. And that is a similar case in Hennepin, and I'm sure that it's similar in St. Louis also. So it both like creates this, the fact that like these three counties basically in a lot of ways are dealing with the emergency homelessness situation for the entire state. And it also means that, you know, the families are disconnected from their support systems in a new community, you know, trying to kind of like stabilize in a place that's unfamiliar to them. And so, you know, this $100 million in shelter capital would go directly to address this issue. You know, this again has been, I think, an area of that we haven't done a lot. There is the way that shelters get built, frankly, is kind of like by hustling and fundraising and hoping and relying on the kindness of faith communities, philanthropy. So, you know, we as the state really haven't kind of occupied what I believe is our rightful role in making sure that these services are available to folks across the state. And I'm just going to finish up because I know we don't have a lot of time, but, you know, this is going to add about 2,000 beds across the state. It will be in every continuum of care region, so we're broken up into, I'm sure you guys know about this in HHS or in human services. And finally, I just, you know, because the sort of relationship between $100 million and 2,000 beds, it's sort of like, oh, that's really expensive for some beds, right? But I just wanted to share, I mean, I think the reason that I'm the chair of this division, and perhaps the reason that there is a division is because I had a homelessness, an encampment in my community in 2020 after George Floyd was killed, which was also in my district. There was this, you know, there was an encampment that was behind the Target, which caught on fire. Those folks kind of like fled and ended up in my local park. And it was very, I spent a lot of time there. It was intense and I learned a lot. And one of the things that was really surprising to me was, how many people there were not accessing shelter because it didn't meet their needs for a number of different reasons. And so, you know, I think that our shelter community has really, over the last few years and in the just the pressure of the pandemic and, you know, needing to decongregate shelters and think totally differently about the way that we provide shelter, that they've really come up with, you know, some ways to do shelter that actually meet people's needs. So a low barrier, service rich, flexible, kind of smaller community 24-hour shelter option that really meets people where they are is the successful model to get folks off the street and into permanent housing. But getting shelter right is very important, and this is going to help us get shelter right. And so I appreciate the consideration today, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, for that excellent explanation. I'm going to go to your first testifier if you want to stop sharing the screen. We have Rhonda Otison with the Minnesota Coalition of the Homeless. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Gomez. My name is Rhonda Otison, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. We're a statewide advocacy organization with over 70 members across the state. Together, we work to generate policies, community support, and local resources for housing and services to end homelessness in Minnesota. I'm here today to voice my support for House File 3090 and the A1 Amendment, which would make it possible to preserve and create over 2,000 shelter beds across the state, ensuring safe indoor spaces for individuals and families sleeping outside or staying in unsafe conditions. Black, Indigenous, and people of color experience homelessness at much higher rates than the white population. We recognize that homelessness is a racial equity issue, and investing into shelter is an important way to counter the systemic impact of homelessness across the state. Over the past 2 years, we've worked very closely with community leaders all across the state, and we're constantly learning of the new projects that are searching for the necessary resources to bring children, families, and adults, veterans, and seniors inside. And so my colleague Zach is going to share the emergency shelter capital needs assessment. This is what we've learned. There are 51 projects ready to be funding, and the funding gap of with a funding gap of almost $100 million. An important nuance of this is that there are 10 projects that don't have a defined cost. So this $100 million is a very close estimate. These investments would create over 2,000 beds across the state through construction, acquisition, or rehabilitation of existing spaces. There are a wide range of shelter projects, including culturally specific, domestic violence shelters, youth shelters, and others as noted on the screen. And I want to point out, like as Representative Gomez said, every single region of the state needs these investments and has plans for shelter projects. We know that shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness. And until we have enough homes for everybody here in Minnesota, we need to look at shelter as that a critical piece of the housing continuum. Everyone should have the safety and shelter that they need as they work towards a permanent home. Thank you for your time. And our policy director, Zach Eichten, and I are both available for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Otison. The second testifier we have is Catherine Mears with the Avenues for Youth.
Chair Schultz, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3090. Also, thank you so much, Representative Gomez, for leading this effort. My name is Catherine Mears, and I am the Executive Director of Avenues for Youth. We support youth experiencing homelessness with shelters in Minneapolis and Brooklyn Park. As you know, Minnesota is facing an unsheltered homelessness crisis. Avenues and our partners work every day to address that crisis, but shelter capacity statewide is not even close enough to meet the need. Avenues provides emergency shelter, short-term housing, and support for youth experiencing homelessness in a safe and nurturing environment. Every year, we support more than 300 youth. However, youth homelessness continues to grow. In Minnesota, an estimated 13,300 youth will experience homelessness every year. 73% of them are Black, Indigenous, and youth of color, and 30% report they stayed in an abusive situation because they had no other housing options. Youth experiencing homelessness have distinct needs that are different from those of single adults or families. When provided developmentally appropriate supports, youth can successfully move into stable housing and thrive as young adults. Shantasia, who has allowed me to share her story, is a perfect example. Shantasia came to Avenues after living in an abandoned house and couch hopping. She felt depressed, angry, and suicidal. But over time, she opened up to staff about her dream to become a nurse. She took full advantage of the education and employment resources Avenues offers, and while living at Avenues, she became a certified nursing assistant. She has now moved into her own apartment and is pursuing a career as a registered nurse. Youth like Shantasia need a home to call their own, and shelters can provide that home as they prepare for more permanent options. Avenues plans to build a new building for our shelter and transitional housing program in Minneapolis that is trauma-informed and meets the specific needs of youth. Our current building was built in 1934 and served many purposes over the years before being converted to a shelter. The space does not adequately meet the needs of youth recovering from trauma. Crowded conditions forced us to reduce capacity during COVID-19, a reduction that we can ill afford when the need is so great. A new building will also allow us to grow our programming to fill the gap between the needs of youth experiencing homelessness and current shelter capacity. However, financing shelter capital projects is difficult. From the federal government down to city governments, there are minimal funding options requiring us to braid multiple funding streams with small amounts of money over the course of a multi-year campaign. This is Minnesota's opportunity to make an unprecedented and historic investment in this critical infrastructure that saves lives. If we wait, youth like Shantasia will continue to couch hop, live on the streets, and stay in abusive situations. The Emergency Shelter Facilities Grant Program is an important step in providing funding for safe and accessible shelters for our homeless youth. Thank you again for this opportunity to support this crucial investment.
Thank you, Ms. Mears. Are there any questions from members? And I will be limiting the number of questions to one per member. Any questions? Not seeing any. Any final comments, Representative Chair Gomez?
Just my gratitude again to the committee for hearing this. I think this will really address an ongoing issue that we've been facing in our state. So appreciate the consideration.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. With that, House File 3090 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Thank you, testifiers. Next, we have House File 3294. This is Representative Ryer's bill. Welcome back to the committee, Representative Ryer. My motion is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill, and I'll make the motion to adopt the Preventing Homelessness Division Report for House File 3294. This is a voice vote, members. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. Representative Ryer, I don't see any amendments, so please describe your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Yes, we came through it without amendments. So I'm here today to talk about House File 3294, a bill that provides funding for the Emergency Services Grant Program. This program is one of the backbones of the shelter system, ensuring that the physical shelter spaces we create have the resources they need. This bill asks for $35 million for fiscal year 2023 and $30 million for fiscal year 24 and 25, for a total of $95 million. This will add $30 million per year to the base for this program, for a total of about $36.8 million per year. That's about $73.7 million per biennium. These funds will be used for the ongoing operations and programming for all emergency shelters statewide, including the new shelter capacity we just heard about in House File 3090. I'd like to share with you what this means in the life of a person receiving these services. When I was in my 20s, I was in a shelter for 30 days with my infant son. This gave us a safe and secure roof over our head. We also had emotional support from staff to recover from trauma, help getting vouchers for housing. Staff brought expertise about obtaining food assistance, healthcare coverage, and provided legal support and advocacy for those who needed it. They took care of my baby while I took care of myself and did what needed to be done. And so much more, all delivered in a place that was homey and well-maintained. I would not be here today without the support I received in those critical 30 days. And the Emergency Services Grant Program is a flexible program, adaptable to the needs of each community that uses it, no matter where they are in the state or the specific population they serve. These services are the lifeline that people in shelter need and that elevate the shelter experience to a step in stability. I'm confident that all of us have the same goal of a shelter system that helps move people forward. In fact, over the years, the Emergency Services Grants Program has had bipartisan support, and this year the lead author in the House is Senator Utke. We talk a great deal about our forecast budget surplus, now more than $9 billion. When I look at this figure, I don't see surplus. I see underinvestment. Funding for this bill is just one way we can help bring our investment into our state and our people, into alignment with our values. I hope you'll agree that passing House File 3294 is one of the very important steps we can take. With that, I'll be glad to take your questions, look forward to hearing from our testifiers, and ask for your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill to our committee. The first testifier we have is Ms. Odison. Can you please limit your testimony to 1 minute since we are running behind schedule?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Schultz, members of the committee, and Representative Ryer. I'm Rhonda Odison, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. We know that homelessness, the needs are great. 20,000 people on any given night, half of whom are children or youth across the state. ESP is such a vital program in our homeless response system, not only to impact the proportionality on communities of color, but all across the state. ESP allows local communities to provide that local tailored response to the needs of people experience that is so important. $95 million over the next 3 years will allow shelters to move to that service-rich environment and really to sustain the services that have been built up over the pandemic. We're facing a funding cliff here all across the state as it relates to the emergency services program. So I would urge your support for this bill. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Odison, for being brief. The next testifier is Femi Ogun. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Olufemi Ogun, and I am a program manager with Catholic Charities of St. Paul and Minneapolis, where I oversee the operation of the Free Opportunity Center. Our day center provides hot meals, showers, storage spaces, medical services, laundry, employment services, housing services, and more to thousands of men and women in our community each year. If you join me early in the morning, you will see people coming to us for basic services, each with their own unique story. One person is coming in right after his night shift for a shower, hot meal, or change of clothes for his locker before heading to work. Another person is coming for hot showers and meal before going about the rest of his day. Our center allows people to come in from our shelter allows people coming to one place for many things, avoiding transportations and lines, which take time and money. It gives people a warm place to stay during the cold winter days. People desperate for updates on their benefits or waiting to hear from family come to check their mail. These are real people turning to us each day for basic essential services. It is a privilege to help the 300 individuals who come through our doors every day, but we must do better. Right now, my center is 93% funded by private dollars. Only 7% of my resources come from public funding. After decades of lack of public investment, we have been forced to rely on private funding and emergency services, and emergency reserves are on sustainable rates and without the reliability needed to plan a more impactful day shelter program. Without public investment, we will not be able to provide all that is needed to improve outcomes for the people we serve. We must do more to support the frontline staff running emergency services. Because of workforce challenges, many staff are overworked, they are burnt out, and work more than one job to support their families. Staff taking care of most vulnerable Minnesotans should not have to work more than one job to live. This bill will offer the resources, and stability needed for Minnesota's shelter system and its workers to disrupt the trends of our homelessness crisis. I know myself and all of us could do better for the people we help if given the chance. I hope you will support this bill and help protect people's dignity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ogan, for the work you do in our community. It's very much appreciated. With that, members, any questions for the bill author testifiers? Chair Fisher.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing the bill forward. I know this is very important. One of the questions I have is that I know that that there are a number of people who are out there who are struggling to find stable housing that are also employed. Do you know approximately what percentage of the adults out there? I know that half of them are kids, but I know that remaining, there's quite a few of them that are employed. Does anyone have that number of what percentage of the people are homeless or actually employed?
Mr. Eichten or Representative Ryer? Mr. Eichten, do you have that information?
Yes, I can. I'm happy to share that information. Thanks, Chair Schultz and Representative Fisher. Approximately one out of—
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes. Thank you. I'm Zach Eichten. I'm the Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Fisher for the question. Approximately one out of three people experiencing homelessness are employed and working jobs. And that is according to the Wilder Research Study.
Thank you, Mr. Eichten. Chair Fisher, any follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for those figures. This shows the even more important reason why we need to be supporting these efforts out there, because many of the people who are unemployed, who are homeless, are also unemployed are employed. And it's troublesome that people can be working and earning a wage and still not have enough money to be able to provide safe, stable housing for their families.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Representative Albright.
Chair, Representative Ryer, thank you for bringing this bill forward. A fiscal question. $30 million base and the tails above the existing appropriations, as I see it in this bill. Are we moving the base to $30 million?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Albright. We are not moving the base to $30 million. We are moving the base to about $37.8 million, if I recall correctly. So it's an addition to the existing just under $8 million per year.
Mr. Eichten, did you want to clarify anything?
Yes, thanks, Chair Schultz and Representative Albright for the question. The bill as drafted, I know it can look a little bit confusing in the language. We had the same question pop up in preventing homelessness. After discussion with fiscal staff, the bill language is intended and is supposed to be read as adding $30 million to the base. The current base per year is $6.844 million.
Mr. Eichten, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and I'm not seeing any other questions. Representative Ryer, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to me, this is obviously a very important thing that we need to do for our community. It helps us with the whole continuum of housing, from people who are in shelter to people who are on the path to stable and affordable housing. So I ask for your support and appreciate you hearing it.
Thank you, Representative Ryer, and thank you to the testifiers. So with that, members, House File 3294 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. The next bill we have on our agenda is House File 3599. This is Representative Keeler's bill. My motion will be to lay over this bill for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill, and I'll make the motion to adopt the division report for House File 3599 from the Preventing Homelessness Division. This is a voice vote, members. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. Representative Keeler, are you here?
I am.
There you are. Welcome back. So I see you have an A1 and an A2 amendment. Do you want to describe the A1 amendment first?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for having me here to talk about it. The A1 amendment is adjusting the study piece of this bill. Originally, it was saying that it was going to Human Services, but because it's dealing with sex trafficking, that study actually makes sense to be under the Health Department. And so that is the change. Also, we're awaiting a fiscal note And so we adjusted the dollar amount that was going to be used for the study to just be a dollar sign waiting for fiscal note to be requested.
Okay, thank you, Representative Keeler, for describing the A1 amendment. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 3599. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the A1 amendment is adopted. The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Keeler, you want to describe the A2 amendment?
Sure. Can I go back just to the A1 amendment? I know that you mentioned that this would be held for to be considered for layover, but with that adding component to health, I think it maybe needs to be referred to the health division as well. So I don't know if we need to discuss that.
Chair Liebling.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Representative Keeler. That was my understanding that, so maybe we should, if I would move to amend that motion to send the bill to health, finance, and policy, because we do need to with if we're adding that amendment.
Thank you for the clarification. Chair Liebling moves to re-refer House File 3599. The motion will be as amended to go to Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor?
Aye.
That motion,
aye.
Please say aye.
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 Okay, the motion prevails. To the A2 amendment, Representative Keeler.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for that vote and decision. After talking to Representative Pinto a bit about it, we thought clearing up actually section, so it's line 2, 0.15, we're actually clearing up what the Commissioner of Health would do with that funding, describing what some of the grants actually are, rather than it looking like just money to the Commissioner. We thought outlining that would be a little bit more clear.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. I'll move the A2 amendment to House File 3599. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Keeler, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'll be really quick because I know we're getting through a lot. We're running behind. I care a lot about our kids and our next generations in this state, along with many of you and along with many of the conversations we've had. A couple stats I just want to give to you around sex trafficking, human trafficking, is that I learned in our education policy committee earlier this year that the MCAs actually started asking our 9th and 11th graders sex trafficking questions. And what we know is 1.7% of our 9th and 11th graders who answered that question actually answered yes, that there's some sort of sex trafficking, human trafficking happening in their life. I know as a Native American liaison, I tell the story that I thought I had a really good connection with one of our students 2 years after she graduated. She came back and told me that she was trafficked every day after school and made it home by 6 p.m. for dinner. Nobody ever knew this was happening to her. This is an issue that's statewide. This is not just a metro issue. These programs and these grants are designed to really help and support our youth so that they can grow in a thriving world that we all want. 40% of sex trafficking cases actually involve a minor. The average age of that minor is 13. So as a mom of a teenager, as an auntie, you know, as somebody who really cares passionately about our kids, that's terrifying to me. This has bipartisan buy-in because I believe we all care about our next generation. We had great conversation about it in preventing homelessness and hope that you all see the value in this investment as well. The bill does have a study around sexually exploited youth and trafficking. And then there's funding that is adding $9 million to our Commissioner of Human Services and also Department of Health and regional navigators, adding $10 million per year ongoing. I think we have some testifiers. I would yield to them the rest of my time.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. I think Representative Pinto might have a question.
I was really just going to comment on the bill, Madam Chair. So maybe I'll wait till.
Okay, please wait. We have Holly Henning with us. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Henning, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Bonjour. Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Holly Henning, and I'm an enrolled tribal member of Merton Falls and Anishinaabe First Nation, and I'm the Deputy Associate Director at Ainda Young Center. I'm here today to support the Homeless Youth Act and the Safe Harbor funding requests. INDA Young Center, which means our home in the Ojibwe language, is a nonprofit serving homeless and at-risk American Indian youth and families in the Twin Cities. INDA Young Center currently receives around $300,000 in Safe Harbor funding to serve youth in the Native community. As a survivor of sexual exploitation and lived experience with homelessness, I'm honored to be able to work with this population. No Minnesotan is for sale, and our youth are priceless. We need to continue to uplift our next generations. Safe Harbor specializes in supportive services, shelter, housing, and survivors to heal from trauma regarding sex trafficking, sexual exploitation, and survival sex. I just ask that you see the importance of this work and fully fund the Safe Harbor request. Chimiklutch, many thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to help answer any questions that you might have. Nyogo.
Thank you, Ms. Henning, for the work you're doing and for testifying today. Representative Pinto, to your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And really just a comment to thank Representative Keeler. And note, I was, for several years, I was the Director of Training and Protocol Development for the statewide Safe Harbor system. So kind of working all throughout the state with the many places this bill would be going to support. And it's just such incredible funding and so incredibly important funding. And I just want to note for everyone that, you know, we have this system in place to help youth who are at risk of exploitation, but there's such a deep need for more services support for them, and that's exactly what this would do. And I appreciate the chance to work with Representative Keeler on that amendment to make sure the funds would go right to where they're needed. So anyway, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Henning, thank you for your testimony this morning. I just have a two-part question for the author of the bill, Representative Keeler. In your bill, it talks about almost a mandate, if you will, or a redirect that MDH doesn't use Safe Harbor funds for any activity outside of those authorized in the Safe Harbor statute. And the part A of my question is something amiss at MDH that you're trying to correct by this language, but because it's very specific in terms of maybe writing wrong or making sure that they're following the statute. So could you just elaborate on that? And then I do have a quick follow on, Madam Chair.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Albright, are you talking about the amendment that we added to clarify the grants? Like you're talking about subsection 2? Is that what you're talking about?
Albright, he says yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that it was really correcting or wrong. I think we just thought that originally the language was a little bit too vague, that we wanted to give the examples of what the grants supported. And I think if there's a way that maybe Representative Pinto could help answer the question, because he was the one that actually
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. So the original language of that subdivision two just said $9 million to MDH for sexually exploited youth under the general Safe Harbor statute. And that's, if you look at that statutory reference, there's a ton of stuff there. There's grants, but there's lots and lots of other things too. And talking to Representative Keeler, the goal was to get the money out for grants for services. And so that's what the A2 amendment reflects.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Albright, to part A of your question.
Yeah, thank you. Part A was answered. And thank you for that elaboration, Representative Pinto. That takes care of it. My second question, and this is either to Representative Keeler or if Representative Pinto wants to bat cleanup on this one as well. Has DHS received Safe Harbor funding before? And should that money instead go to MDH? So we have plurality here. Why wouldn't you direct MDH? Are we crossing over into a different, you know, realm of reality here? Why are we both directing both?
Representative Keeler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to say, can I phone a friend to help so we have clear answers?
I'm happy to say, yeah. So, Representative Albright, the structure is that the Safe Harbor Director is within MDH because it's really a public health model, and there are services and support for Safe Harbor within DHS, for housing and supportive shelter, et cetera. And so there really is a partnership between the two, and so the bill reflects that there's funds that need to go through DHS for these grants for street outreach, et cetera, but then also funds that need to go through MDH. That's just the structure we've had for Safe Harbor. I'll note, by the way, that just last spring we put in a piece within DPS as well, public safety, to kind of complete the triangle, the coordination among the three. It's outside of our committee's jurisdiction. But so it really is hits both agencies.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Bonner.
Madam Chair, and thank you to the author for bringing this bill forward. I just wanted to make a very brief statement.
Representative Bonner, can you speak up or get closer to your mic, please?
Sorry, thanks. I will get a little closer. My apologies. I just wanted to say that I think that we have seen alarm bells going off across the state when it comes to the trafficking of young Indigenous women. And yet many of those alarm bells have been unheeded. And I have to believe that if the general population knew what was actually happening, that this would be front page news. It is really time that we address some of these issues and take them head on. And so I am really grateful to Representative Keeler for bringing this forward and having the courage to raise up those alarm bells and say that we need to do better for our young Indigenous women. This cannot continue. So thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Final comments, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for the discussion and the help in getting this right. I do want to say, Representative Bonner, I appreciate you bringing up the Indigenous issue, but I just want to make sure that we know and understand that this is an issue that all of our youth are dealing with across this entire state. Though we know Indigenous rates are higher or look different, I just want to make sure that we clarify that this bill alone is to support all of our students across the entire state. I look forward to your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Members, this will be a roll call vote. So, Ms. Hansen, please prepare to take the roll. The motion is to re-refer House File 3599 as amended to Health, Finance, and Policy. The chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thank you. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins? Representative Sandell?
Sandell, aye.
Sandell, aye. Thank you, sir. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Chair Schultz, that's 18 ayes and one excused.
Thank you, members. The motion prevails, and the bill's headed to Health Finance. Representative Keeler, you also have the next bill on our agenda, which is House File 3661. My motion will be to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. I'll make also a motion to adopt the division report for preventing homelessness for House File 3661. Members, this will be a voice vote. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion prevails and the division report is adopted. Representative Keeler, I see you have an A1 amendment. Would you please describe that for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This one shouldn't be as complicated as the last one. We did the same thing that we did in the last one around the study, requesting a fiscal note that we haven't received yet. And so that's why we've changed line 2.6. And then also adding that this is ongoing funding added to the base rather than one-time funding, as it kind of mentioned originally.
Okay, thank you, Representative Keeler. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 3661. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Keeler, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Back to the conversation about caring about our kids. It's something I'm passionate about, and I think we see that we all really care about our next generation. The one thing I really, really love about the Homeless Youth Act grants is that this conversation started in 1999 and was established by our frontline workers and individuals who were actually experiencing homelessness themselves. I think it's really important that we listen to the individuals that are doing this work and the individuals who are experiencing homelessness. What these grants do is it provides services such as homelessness prevention, street outreach, drop-in centers, host homes, and so much more. We've known that these grants play significant roles in helping to prevent and reduce homelessness in our youth, and then increases the likelihood of engagement in our communities in a healthy way as adults. So again, I look forward to your support.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. We have one testifier, Nicole Mills. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nicole Mills. I'm the Executive Director at Oasis for Youth. At Oasis, we serve young adults ages 16 to 24 experiencing homelessness and housing instability in Bloomington, Richfield, and Edina. Last year, we served 390 youth through a continuum of services from our drop-in center, school and community outreach, housing, and our innovative employment program in partnership with the Mall of America. These programs and many like us across the whole state would not be possible without the strategic investment in leadership of the state of Minnesota and the Homeless Youth Act. Today, I ask you to fully fund the Homeless Youth Act by investing $50 million in Minnesota's youth. Together, I truly believe we can end youth homelessness in our state. According to Wilder Research, in Minnesota, an estimated 13,300 youth ages 10 to 24 are without homes each year. And the real number is likely higher because our youth are often invisible. But we know that the Homeless Youth Act is part of the solution. It does this in three critical ways. It outlines support, the continuum of services available for youth through outreach, drop-in centers, shelters, transitional and supportive housing. Our Homeless Youth Act investments have been critical for a statewide response. Our youth in Bemidji, Moorhead, Duluth, Rochester, across our state can get services close to home, and we know that is critical for them. And the Homeless Youth Act additionally has been critical to leverage philanthropic dollars, federal and county investments to serve youth throughout our state. We know that the Homeless Youth Act works and investing in youth works. So I just want to thank you for your time and your leadership.
Thank you, Ms. Mills, for your testimony. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. I'll be brief because I know we've got a time constraint. So Representative Keeler, thank you again for bringing this forward. This is a very compelling issue before the legislature. Feel free to phone a friend if you need to, because we're going to dive into the weeds on this one. But in the bill, it talks about a prevention of DHS from using funds appropriated for homeless youth study grants for any activities not authorized in statute or for creating additional eligibility criteria. You've got some other verbiage in there about, you know, kind of guideposts or, if you will, making sure that DHS doesn't go off the rails. Why the language?
Representative Keeler, would you like me to refer this to DHS?
I'll answer quick and then we can refer. But for me, I think anytime that we can outline what we're hoping this money does, it gives examples and it gives our intent where the money is funded. I am still learning how to do that in language because I don't want large appropriations for agencies just to use money outside of the intent that we want. So I think that was the language in why we were a little bit more specific. But yeah, we can phone a friend.
Mr. Burke.
Madam Chair, I just thought I'd jump in here, and I'm not sure this may have been drafted either by parties outside of the legislature or maybe over in the Senate. It is generally, the agency cannot legally use the money for anything other than the program it's appropriated for anyway. So that language is entirely superfluous. I can't tell you why it's in there, but it's utterly unnecessary.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Berg. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A teachable moment for Representative Keeler. Final question. You've heard this one before from me, but right now the base for the Homeless Youth Act is $5.125 million. You're asking for $50 million. The bill as constructed right now would add that to the base. That's an ongoing base appropriation for as long as the legislature wants to continue it. Is that your intent?
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. It is our intent, because I think that when we make one-time investments, I think that that's great, but this is a long-term issue, and we know that it's an issue that's across our state, and we're always going to be dealing with homelessness in our youth. And so for me, I believe that this is worthwhile to have an ongoing appropriation and investment, because it's saying to our kids and our youth and our programs that we know that this is going to be needed, and we are dedicated to showing up for you in the future, not just this one time.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Final comments, Representative Keeler.
Representative Albright, I sent you a message. I'd love to have further conversations about some of this. I know this comes up in other spaces as well, and I am open to having more conversations, because as a freshman, I am learning. But thank you all for your time. Thank you all for the opportunity to talk about the importance in investing in our youth and our population across the state.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. So with that, members, House File 3661 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. Let's see, next on our agenda, and we have two more bills, is House File 3200. This is Representative Hollins. Welcome back to our committee. My motion will be to lay over House File 3200 in our omnibus bill, and I'll also move the division report from Preventing Homelessness for House File 3200. This is a voice vote, members. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and the division report is adopted. I'm not seeing any amendments, Representative Hollins. Can you please describe your bill?
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing this important piece of legislation. I think when we think about homelessness, we think a lot about shelters and emergency shelters, but I think we can all agree that while shelters are very important, our ultimate goal is to have everybody in safe, stable, permanent housing. And that's really where transitional housing programs come into play. Transitional housing programs are time limited and have a great success in moving people from homelessness into permanent housing. People with lived experience and providers identified this program in need of both some policy changes and some additional resources to meet the need that we are seeing in our homeless population. And so specifically, this bill seeks to move the transitional timeline of the program from 24 months to 36 months. And it appropriates $9 million to cover the existing funding gap of $6 million, along with an additional cost that would be incurred by extending the timeline so folks can stay in the program for the full 36 months. I am delighted to have several testifiers here, and I will turn it over to them.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. The first testifier is Ms. Addison. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Hollins, for authoring and leading this bill. I'm Rhonda Addison, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, back with you. I'm happy to be with you today to express support for House File 3200 and the increased funding of $9 million per biennium. This transitional housing program is a really important bridge program for families, youth, survivors of domestic violence, and adults as they transition from homelessness to a permanent home. Across the state, this program allows the flexibility to provide transitional housing in a scattered site model or a fixed site model. And that's really important for communities to be able to tailor those local solutions. Funding for the program provides rental assistance and funds ongoing case management or support services needed to support the holistic needs of people participating in the program. Over the past 2 years, this was identified through our listening sessions by people with lived experience and providers as a key area of effective program opportunities for expansion. In particular, this program is especially helpful for women and children fleeing domestic violence and youth experiencing homelessness. We're fully supportive of the move from 24 to 36 months as a time period, because it takes people longer to transition from homelessness and to attain that stability that folks need. And second, finding a home is extremely difficult given the lack of homes that are affordable and available in the current environment. For example, the Housing Choice Voucher Program or Section 8, the waiting lists vary by region, but it can take years to get onto that program and to gain access. So by extending that timeline, we're going to really increase the positive outcomes to permanent housing. There's also some policy change language on 2.6 and 2.7, removing a 10% cap language from statute. And we heard from providers that that's really just a little bit confusing and that the extensions were rarely used. And so finally, I just want to express my support for this bill. Providers all across the state are eager to be able to help more people transition into a permanent home. And if you have any questions, both our policy director, Zach, and I are available for any. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Addison. The next testifier we have is Jennifer Jorgensen. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Schultz and committee members. My name is Jen Jorgensen, and I am here as a provider on behalf of SEMCAC Community Action in support of House File 3200. I'm a case manager out of our Steele County Outreach Office and in SEMCAC service area. Our typical time frame a household utilizes the transitional housing program is generally 1 year. And within that time, we find that most households are able to increase their income and transition off of our program, or in some situations are able to receive a housing choice voucher, transitioning them from our short-term program to a longer-term one while staying in the home that they were able to move into with our assistance. Participants routinely tell us that this program is life-changing and life-saving. But what happens when the complexity of the needs will exceed the 2-year time limit of the program, or there are very limited dollars to put towards the support services, the household may need to be self-sufficient without the program? Not all situations are able to be worked out within the current time and limited dollars for support services. One example, with permission from the family, last August I accepted a family of 3 into our program with the idea that they would need short-term assistance getting moved into a new stable apartment, and then some short-term subsidies and limited case management. The family had immigrated to Minnesota from Honduras and were in the process of seeking asylum. None of the family members speak English, had very limited family and friends to help them navigate, but they were getting by and would have been okay. 3 days after moving into a new apartment with the bare minimum of household items and food, the wage earner was killed in a car accident out of state while coming home from a job out of state. Now we have a single mom who is ineligible for any programs because she is still waiting on immigration, unable to go back to the country they once called home, and do not speak the language in the place that is now home to them. Due to the continued intense case management and ongoing advocacy for this particular family, we are concerned about running out of time within our program. In the 6 months of working with this grief-stricken household, mom has begun taking ESL classes and works hard at navigating in an unfamiliar place to her. Not all situations are cut and dry, and not all situations can be solved within a determined amount of time. In this family's case, an additional 12 months would be a huge stress relief so that we can focus on settling this family up for success in our community. Please support House File 3200. Extend the transitional housing program so that families can find support on a timeline that works. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Ms. Jorgensen. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hollins, or to the testifier, a couple quick questions. How many people are in transitional housing for the full 2 years currently?
Representative Hollins, would you like me to go to Mr. Eichten?
Yes, I think that's a fair question for him.
Mr. Eichten.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. My name is Zach Eckden with the Coalition for the Homeless. And to Representative Albright, that's a great question. It depends on the area, and really the main thing that determines if folks are able to transition is a availability of affordable, safe, accessible housing in the area in their community. And then, of course, as Ms. Jorgensen mentioned, also the complexity of needs with that case management. And then there's also the availability of a housing choice voucher. Typically, a lot of cases are able to be resolved within that 24 months. But when we're dealing with folks who are exiting homelessness, who may be dealing with a lot of trauma, sometimes those needs get really complex. And we've just heard from a lot of folks with lived experience that that the stress of trying to navigate exiting homelessness, the trauma, and trying to find permanent housing is really difficult within that 2-year time limit. So while programs work really hard to graduate people into permanent housing, that extra year would be really key for making it a more effective transition to permanent housing.
Thank you, Mr. Eichten. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Eichten, or to Representative Hollins, if people aren't ready to move out of transitional housing after 2 years or more, what are we going to do to ensure that the work, that the group, the plan, or the program works as intended? Then?
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. I'm not sure that I quite understand your question, and I think it's beyond the scope of this particular piece of legislation, but I understand your concern, because if we have a program that where we just extend it out further and further, we run the risk of being in transitional housing forever, and I'm guessing that's kind of what you're getting at. I mean, I can say with a lot of certainty that that is not the goal of these programs. This is not the intent. These programs are specifically designed to get people into permanent housing. And because of the variations across the state, it's not always possible to do that within 2 years. I'm sure you know how tight the housing market is, you know, in my city, the city of St. Paul, but also across the state, it's just very difficult. And so I would like to reassure you that that's not the goal of this whatsoever. And in fact, we don't anticipate that everybody's going to be using the full 3 years, because also people don't really want to live in transitional housing necessarily. They're interested in getting into their own space, having their own autonomy, and you know, living a normal life in their own housing. That being said, I'll also turn it over to Mr. Eichten to see if he has anything to add.
Mr. Eichten.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Albright for the question. Certainly our intention is not to have people in this program long-term. We want there to be enough time for case management to have the appropriate time to deal with, you know, the complexities of certain cases. And we are trying to use our other resources like housing choice vouchers or permanent supportive housing and trying to transition people over on a timeline that works better for the complexity. But those permanent supportive housing options are available for people who need case management in a longer term setting as well.
Thank you, Mr. Eichten. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also I'd like to mention is that I see from on the ground how important it is that we have more than 24 months, and particularly in the homeless youth world, it's not unusual that you will have youth who are 18, 19, 20 who are just coming out. They don't have the skills and the abilities that a regular adult has. And many times they need longer lengths of time. That's been some of the frustrations we've seen when working with youth, is that they need a little bit more time, and that 24 month is may work for some adults, definitely does not work for a lot of youth. And this gives that flexibility to make sure that youth have the extra time that they need with the supportive services to be successful down the road.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Not seeing any more questions. Any closing remarks, Representative Hollins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to piggyback off of Representative Fisher said as well. I mean, folks who are dealing with addiction and substance abuse concerns as well really do need that time to feel supported in what they're doing before they move into transitional housing. And when we move them too quickly, they really run the risk of relapsing and becoming a further burden on the state. And so this is really seeking to preemptively deal with individuals who have a higher level of need, and hopefully do that in a more cost-effective way than making them cycle throughout the system again and again. So thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate the opportunity to do this, and thank you to my testifiers today.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. With that, members, House File 3200 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Okay, members, last bill on the agenda today, House File 2762. This is Chair Stevenson's bill. Welcome to the committee. My motion is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our Human Services, Finance, and Policy omnibus bill. I'll make the motion to adopt the division report for House File 2762. Please unmute yourself. This is a voice vote. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. I'm not seeing any amendments, Chair Stevenson. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I can't remember if we filled in the appropriation in the division or we're going to do it here. There should have been an amendment, though, sent in, I thought, to this committee. Let me.
Chair Gomez may remember.
It was still blank in our committee.
I thought we submitted an amendment.
Also thought we submitted an amendment, but I know that right now the form it's in doesn't have the $8 million in it. But let me check.
I do have the amendment here, an A1 amendment. I can forward it. I don't know what the chair, I don't know if you received it or if it didn't make it to you. And I don't know how you want to handle it, Madam Chair, especially if you're laying over the bill, perhaps I could just discuss it.
Why don't you just discuss it and we can take care of it later.
That sounds good.
Proceed to discuss your bill, Chair Stevens.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, this is this bill relates to a excellent not-for-profit that exists in Anoka County called Hope for Youth that helps young people experiencing homelessness. It is the only not-for-profit in Anoka County, or organization, I should say, in Anoka County, that specifically addresses homelessness among young people. And it's very important. I know that you've been looking at a number of bills today regarding homelessness. And, you know, homelessness is something that we sometimes associate with urban areas, but it is a problem that we face in all corners of the state, in suburban areas and rural areas, and it's a problem that affects all ages. It's just that in suburban areas and among young people in particular, it tends to be less visible. You know, homeless kids, you might be couch surfing, they might be living out of their cars, they might be in places that people can't see them. I certainly felt that way for a number of my years in life. I didn't appreciate how severe the problem is, and some of my testifiers today will talk to the scale of that. Hope for Youth is a great organization that works with those young people. They have three facilities up in Anoka County, a drop-in center, a residential center, and some administrative space. This proposal is to replace and expand their existing drop-in center, because they frankly outgrown it. It no longer meets their needs to serve the people that they are serving. We really have a lot of support for this organization up in the northern suburbs. They do great work, and I have a couple testifiers here today to talk about the work that they've done and the need for this project.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. First testifier I have in my list is Michelle Williams. Please introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee. Then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, members of the committee, and Representative Stevenson. We are honored to be here today. My name is LaShelle Williams, and I am the Executive Director of Hope for Youth. And to guide our quick conversation, if I could share some slides, I would love to do that. It is no secret to any of you that youth homelessness is absolutely real. This year, over 13,000 Minnesota youth will experience homelessness. Young people on their own, as Representative Stevenson just shared, are the least visible, but they are the most vulnerable of all those experiencing homelessness. In many cases, life has simply happened to those 16 to 24-year-olds, but we are here. At Hope for Youth, our mission in 2013, when we opened our doors, was to create pathways to end youth homelessness. Our vision has been squarely rooted in providing a safe, value-based, and supportive environment where young people could obtain those basic needs and then receive from us tools to thrive. Our strategic priorities are very clear, and we're currently operating programs in two of those three facilities that Representative Stevenson shared. Today, we're talking about the drop-in center. There, we create a welcoming and trusting environment, and it's working. We saw a 45% increase over the previous year, and COVID had no effect on homelessness. We realized visits of nearly 2,500 young people, whether they came to us hungry or cold or afraid, we met those basic needs first. And then we provided, through case management, services that truly could impact and change the trajectory of their lives, taking them from being homeless to being self-sustaining in our community. Now, we meet our young people where they are. We come alongside them with a fourfold approach, and that approach is centered on harm reduction, client or youth-centered engagement, strength-based mindset, and informed trauma-informed care. And what we have found is through this model, Hope for Youth has been able to address those interconnected issues that often surface once a young people feels safe and in a trusted environment. I am honored and privileged and thrilled to be sharing with you that we're moving the needle. But our problem today is that we are constrained by our 6,000 square foot facility. It's a rented facility that has served us well for the 9 years that we have been serving our youth, but there is not space to add one more youth coming through the door or the programs that they need. A new facility would allow us to continue those basic needs, whether it's providing food or a place for them to take a shower or wash clothes or even pick up diapers. But then we can move into that case management where we're really empowering and building them to understand how do they even get into stable housing, and then how do they maintain it? Some of the assets that they might need in training, whether it relates to education, vocational, or employment, we can connect them to those individuals or organizations that will help them to thrive. And then, as we have been, you've already been discussing the reality of some of our homeless individuals, most specifically youth, they're dealing with a multitude of challenges. Trauma that they didn't ask for, issues that might arise, maybe chemical dependency themselves. And what we want to do in this new center is connect with and align ourselves with partners that will help us to further empower our young people. So to close, in my very, very brief synopsis of this project, I hope that you hear that this request is more than just bricks and mortar. It is truly a request for need of space that would allow us then to grow our program services, open our doors to more young people, and then the partnerships that will help them to thrive. So with that, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Thank you for that testimony. We can stop sharing the slides. Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the author of the bill, Representative Stevenson, a lot of virtue in here, but I have never seen in my years in the legislature the word or abandoned to describe a building. Could help me understand why that word was put in a bill.
Chair Stevenson?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I'm sorry, what was the word that you were asking about again?
Representative Albright?
Funding would be available until the project is completed or abandoned.
Rep Stevenson?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I think that that's just saying that if the project was unable to proceed, that the money would cancel back to the state for whatever reason.
Representative Albright?
Madam Chair, as Mr. Berg mentioned in an earlier, I think this might be a teachable moment. I think the verbiage that we use denotes, you know, the dispensation of a building and a project that's funded with taxpayer dollars. So to abandon a project without some type of after action report leaves me with a real hollow fiduciary feeling about the project itself. So point of clarification on that sentence, I think, would be highly recommended.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright certainly can re-examine the language that was drafted here. I think that's every intention that the project will be completed.
Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, I'm getting a little, I mean, this is out in my colleague on capital investments turf, but I'm pretty certain that there is general law now on bonding that bonding appropriations are swept after a certain amount of time, that may be 7 years, but don't hold me to that. This language would put this appropriation outside of that law, which I suspect MMB at least would have some question about.
Representative Stevenson, can we blame the Senate on this one? Did they draft the language?
I'm always, Madam Chair, I'm always happy to blame the Senate and always happy to clean up their messes. So we can certainly fix this if it is of concern to Representative Albright.
We'll look into that, Representative Albright. Representative Mohler.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This is way outside of my wheelhouse, but I did look at the 16A.642 that's referenced in the bill. And I did go to that statute, and it does mention the word abandoned. So that is in statute. How it's used in that, again, that's way outside my wheelhouse, but I do see that in the statute referenced in this bill.
Thank you, Representative Mohler, for that expertise. Any other questions? I am going to offer an oral amendment to put the appropriation in, if that is all right with Lead Albright.
Madam Chair, sidebar then, while we're doing a public hearing, what are you thinking about?
I believe Chair Stevenson quoted $8 million. So the oral amendment would be to put in on page one, line six, we would delete the dollar sign, dot, 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 and insert $8 million for the appropriation.
Madam Chair, is that the amendment that is
in the amendment.
Ethernet right now?
Yep.
Madam Chair, while I appreciate, that's a fairly sizable amount, it doesn't go to syntax. I'd be more comfortable if that were brought forward in conference or on the floor in an omnibus bill or in conference committee, I should say. I'd like to take a look at the context.
Thank you. That's fine. Thank you, Representative Albright. We can add it later since we're laying this bill over, Representative Stevenson. But just for the record, we never did receive that amendment. So with that, Rep. Stevenson, I'm not seeing any more questions. Any concluding remarks?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. Thank you in particular to Representative Mohler. Always helpful to be rescued by a very good lawyer there. So I appreciate her contribution. This is a phenomenal project. It's very important for Anoka County and for kids in Anoka County in particular. It enjoys bipartisan support. It passed out of Representative Gomez's committee with unanimous support from all members of both the DFL, the Republican, and even the new House Republican caucus. So I'm very pleased to bring it before you today and ask for the committee to support it. Renew my motion to lay the bill over.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. So not seeing anything else, members. So with that, House File 2762 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. With that, members, thank you so much for getting through six bills today. I want to again thank all the testifiers and thank Chair Gomez for her incredible work she's doing this session. With that, members, I will see everybody next Tuesday, and we are adjourned.